it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
As cold as a razor blade, as tight as a tourniquet, like the skin on a dying man.
I don't want a piece of the world. I want the whole world.
I make my own rules because it's much easier that way.
Trust me.
What's up, everybody? It's Marcus D'Angelo, and we are back for another episode of the Snake Pit. And, of course, I could not do this without the man himself, master of the DDT, Hall of Famer, Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, but you could do this without me. It just suck.
I don't know if people would want to hear me just, like, monologuing by myself about podcasting, right?
Maybe you're right.
But fortunately, we are back talking about Mid-Atlantic this week, Jake, and it's something that I've seen a lot of demand for online. What we're going to do for 1982 here is we're actually going to break 1982 into three episodes total, parts one, two, and three. Then we're going to wrap up your time in Mid-Atlantic here. But man, we've got some fun notes today, and I can't wait to get into them. But Jake, you know, before we get into these notes, I did want to talk about something that you and I've got going on here on the show, and that's that we are moving away from ad-free shows. Now, before people get up in arms, our audio is not going anywhere. You guys can still download us every Tuesday at the same location as you always have. However, Jake and I are trying to go off and learn a new hold, if we want to use like a wrestling term. By that, I mean, we're taking a harder look at YouTube. Now, we don't know what that looks like just yet, but we want to go over to YouTube and bring exclusive content over there. So with that being the case, we kind of wanted to cut off one source of exclusive content, funnel everybody to one place, and that's going to be our YouTube page at youtube.com/@snakepitpod. So get over there, get subscribed, have a look, and Jake and I are going to start bringing some fresh content there or somewhere on YouTube here in the near future. But yeah, it's we're certainly thankful for everything, all the opportunities that ad-free shows have provided for us. Right, Jake?
Absolutely, man. Looking forward to trying something new.
Absolutely, brother. So again, we aren't going anywhere, folks. It's still going to be a weekly podcast. You can still get the audio. So carry on as normal and just keep your eyes peeled because you're going to be getting some exclusive content and ad-free content via YouTube. So, Jake, with all that out of the way, let's get into these notes. You know, when we last left off talking about Blackjack Mulligan Jr. as your tag team partner, who fans, of course, know better as Barry Windham. And you're on this never ending carousel of partners that, just come and go. On the bright side, you and Barry seem to have some really incredible chemistry. And, you know, one thing that stands out as I watch back a lot of your work together is really quick in and out kind of tags between the two of you. Like it seems like you guys are using one brain, in these tag team matches. What can you tell us about getting to know Barry and forming this chemistry with him?
It was a natural thing, man. We didn't have to even work at it. It just seemed like the right thing to do each time we stepped in the ring. We didn't talk about it. We just went out there and looked at each other and just went. It's like we'd read each other's minds.
It looks like it on camera. You know, I've been, as we've mentioned here a few times, I'm training with International Wrestling Cartel here in Pittsburgh. And so I'm starting to watch wrestling differently in that I'm trying to watch for guys calling spots and see the communication between tag team partners. It's more like you'll glance over at him or something and you two are just instantly on the same page and off to the races.
That's it. A glance was all we needed.
It's pretty amazing stuff, and we're going to post some videos from it on social media, so get over to social media and have a look at some of these tag team matches that Jake is in with Barry. Man, really underrated combination, and something like that, I know, again, you hate tag team wrestling, but man, something cool like that, it's like, I could have seen you guys as a long-term tag team.
It could have worked if they had ever given us the opportunity, but the whole problem in Mid-Atlantic was, I was being fed different partners, and doing the same thing.
Yep.
we never got in the ring with anybody that it really meant anything. We just had job matches, you know, where we'd go out and beat up two guys. Really frustrating.
And that's exactly to your point. You would do that with Steamboat. You would do that with, I think, Blackjack Senior on a few occasions. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And it's like, boy, really just kind of spinning your tires.
Dory Funk. Yeah. I mean, I just had partners out the ass, man. But no meals to chew on. No angles.
I'm going to go back through and look at, like, do a count on all the tag team partners you have by the time we get to the end of talking about Mid-Atlantic. I would guarantee it's going to be a list of 10 or 12 different partners.
Oh, yeah. Jay Youngblood, another one.
Yep. Jay Youngblood. Actually, we're about to talk about you teaming up with Ray Stevens here.
Oh, wow.
So we'll get to that in a second. And I can't wait to talk to you about Ray Stevens. But before we do, I did want to talk to you more about Barry Windham. You know, you crossed paths with Windham a lot over the course of your career. Would you say that you picked up anything from him or that you taught him anything as the two of you were working together?
I don't know, man. I think we just fed off each other and we just learned a great opportunity for me and for him. You know, to have somebody in there the same stature, the same age, and just be able to go with it.
Like, you're not going to find two guys with more in common than you and Barry Windham back in those days. You guys are, like, the same height, look very similar, work very similar, both second-generation stars. It's like, no wonder. You guys were, like, a tag team made in heaven.
Yeah, we were, man. It was absolutely fabulous, man. But the only time we ever did it was on television and the secondary towns, you know. We never went to the major towns. We just got fed the secondary towns and, you know, nobody wanted to be there. And the opponents we had didn't want to be there. Nobody wanted to fucking be there.
Like, if the wrestlers don't want to be there, probably the fans don't really want to be there either.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Well, you and Barry would show that same chemistry in singles matches just a year later in Florida with you as the antagonistic heel. But here, you guys are both baby faces, and it's really strange seeing you cut these promos that are like, you're cutting some, they're good promos, but they're very like white meat baby face style approach. What can you tell us about cutting these promos as compared to like the sinister tone that you'd come to be known for?
Well, I was just getting into the learning thing, man, and, you know, Mid-Atlantic was the first time that really got a lot of mic time. You know, we had a lot of mic time there. You know, whether you were doing interviews for the tape itself or for their individual cities where you do promos for each town. They lasted, you know, 3 minutes. So you got to do something in 3 minutes. So the white meat baby face thing was just, that's where I've been put. You know, I couldn't go out and do that sinister shit, but I was learning. I was learning. In fact, I don't know if you can find it, but I went to the Crockett's TV truck and made friends there. And we put together a 3-minute highlight reel of my matches.
No way.
And we played it to the music Pink Floyd. And it was really pretty cool. And at the end of the song, you hear an airplane going down. And I'm looking at a guy and giving him a DDT. In slow motion. And as it hits, the plane explodes. And as I turn over and pin the guy and look into the camera, a baby starts to cry. So I made that, but I couldn't fucking use it. Where can I put it into play? I couldn't put it into play in Crockett's territory because it was straight out heel shit.
Yep.
But I did use it later on in life.
You know, as you were saying that, it started to ring a bell, and I was like, okay, wait a minute. This is familiar. And then as soon as you said the baby starts crying at the end, it clicked. You used it in Georgia when you were booking there.
I sure did.
Yep. Nobody gave a single shit about like copyright laws or whatever back then. You're using Pink Floyd's music. It's, hey, brother, it's on TV. Let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I did it, and I was quite proud of it.
It's really good.
I thought it was.
So you made friends with guys in the production truck. Were you actually sitting, like, overseeing them as they were editing, or was Jake the Snake doing a little video editing?
I was overseeing them.
Okay, so you were just kind of telling them where you wanted everything. Right. And man, dude, that is awesome to know that you had a huge hand in producing that. I saw that video not that long ago. I'm going to find it again and share it so that everybody can have a look. That is really cool, Jake.
Yeah, man. I thought you might like that.
Well, as we move on here, I mentioned that you are going to be paired with Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and the legendary Ray Stevens in a six-man tag team match against Ivan Koloff and Gene and Ole Anderson. So as I did research on this one, I was just blown away. I mean, you know, Ray is a guy who influenced so many wrestlers from your generation, and here you are tag teaming with him. What was it like working with Ray?
Well, it only happened one time.
Yeah.
That I remember. And then he blew his knee out.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure did, man. But no, it was I remember that night, man. I'm like looking at the card going, holy fuck, here we go. Finally. But the bottom line was is they wanted to shoot an angle with Ray Stevens and Koloff.
Yep.
So we were just out there to pad the fucking walls.
Cause Ray at this time, he's older than you guys, right?
Oh yeah.
So they're like, okay, let's put him with like the hot young tag team and they can take all the bumps and then he can come do like the cleanup work sort of thing.
Do the cleanup work and shoot the angle.
So on one hand, it's like, hey man, you know, as a fan of wrestling, pretty awesome moment for you where it's like Ray Stevens, this legendary performer, and you're teamed up with him. On the other side, now that you're older and you can look back with a perspective, it's like, okay, but they were just kind of using me.
They were using me totally. I knew it.
Oh, you even knew it back then.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Man, would you say that you took any influence from Stevens like so many of your peers did?
I don't know. That would be for the fans to say. I don't see it. I may have done it. I didn't intentionally do it, but I may have picked up something. I'm sure I picked up something.
You know, Ray, again, he's one of those guys who connected with fans for decades and decades. And yeah, like Ric Flair references him all the time as a guy that he took stuff from. He'll admit directly, like, I took a lot from Ray Stevens.
Yeah.
What do you think it was about Ray that made him so unique?
He was just a hand, man. You know, he knew where he was going and nobody else did. But he knew where to go, man. And he knew how to get it done. And there's not one thing that you can just point out, but it's just always been there, man. I mean, when you sit down with Ray Stevens, you sit down with the best.
Mm.
And he was definitely one of the best.
Man, cool as hell, again, that you got to work with him. Just another one of those moments where, you know, as I kind of go over your career timeline as I'm doing research, I'm like, Jake worked with him? Like, and there's another moment like that coming up in here, which I can't wait to talk to you about. But behind the scenes, Ray, like, good dude, or, you know, again, it's a really competitive business. I could also see a veteran coming in kind of having a chip on his shoulder.
He kind of had his own clique going on, man.
Okay.
You know, he was hanging with the... With Ole and those guys.
So your interactions with him, probably handshake, nice to meet you. That's it.
That was about it.
Okay.
Thank you, kid.
Well, hey, that's better than you'll get from some veterans, probably.
Yeah, true that.
Along the way here in December 81, you're going to be part of another Cadillac tournament, and you'll defeat Greg Valentine in the final to win the tournament. And then, Jake, in January, you're in yet another one of these tournaments, and you win again, this time beating Sergeant Slaughter. So, first off, here's what I find so weird about this whole thing, this whole run with you, is you're stuck in this limbo from a creative standpoint, but you're winning these tournaments and beating some of the biggest stars in the territory, like clean singles matches. Man,
but I'm not driving a fucking Cadillac.
So that's the next question, but we'll just ask it right now. A few fans reached out last time we discussed this, and they were like confused about how it actually works. Was it that you were getting to buy it? If you won the tournament, you had the option to buy the Cadillac at cost from the dealer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck.
So they're not giving you a fucking Cadillac. You're not winning two Cadillacs over in the course of 2 months.
Hell no.
You never took the deal from the dealers and bought that Caddy?
I couldn't afford it, man.
Apparently, they weren't paying you all that great during this period, right?
They weren't.
Were you being promised things that weren't being delivered by the bookers?
Absolutely. I walked out 3 times.
Wow.
3 times. I said, fuck you guys, I'm done. I walked out 3 times and each time they talked me into coming back. And each time when I got back, nothing fucking changed.
Do you think it's...
They're putting you over in a Cadillac tournament, but guess what? They're not shooting a fucking angle. They're not giving you something that you can go back to and work with and build. Nothing. That's what I needed. I needed a long program with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Not a one-shot deal. Yeah, I beat Slaughter. Big fucking deal. I mean, it's a great thing to beat Slaughter. I'm not taking away from that. But the bottom line is that was in one town. And that was it.
I think that, a lot of fans say like, well, Jake is, he's being positioned well because he's going over. It's like being positioned well is getting a really strong program.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's the big difference.
That way you can show them that you draw, that you put asses in seats.
Mm-hmm.
That because of what you're doing, you're building a program that's drawing more and more and more. That's what you want.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
And if you're in a strong storyline, who gives a shit if you win or lose? It's really just about getting over with the crowd.
I don't give a damn about winning and losing, man. Just give me that storyline that I can play out.
And by the way, that's exactly how things would go in your career. We talked about the incredible like 1990 to 1991, 92 that you had in the WWF. All incredible storylines. It doesn't matter if you beat Earthquake on these shows or he was beating you. It was, holy shit, what a great story. Can't wait to tune in next week.
Absolutely. And we put asses in seats.
Sure did. Well, I'm wondering what seat your ass was in as far as driving a car. You were not in a Cadillac. What were you driving at the time, Jake?
At the time, I was driving like a 77 T-Bird.
Wow, pretty awesome car.
It was a piece of shit.
Oh.
One of the Japanese that came over to the States, and he put about 100,000 miles on it. And then sold it to Ricky Steamboat, who put another 20,000 on it. And then I bought it and put about 15,000 on it and parked it one night. And there was a female involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we parked it someplace and went in her car. And when I got back, my car was totally destroyed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I can't say for sure because I wasn't there, but I would think it was the boyfriend.
Oh, shit. Oh, man. All right. Did you know that night that you were with a lady who had a fellow in her life?
I did.
Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the insurance didn't cover you.
Yes, it did.
It did.
In fact, I was able to buy an 82 Trans Am.
After, okay.
But it was quite a step up.
So you got laid and you got a new car?
Absolutely.
Come on, man.
That's better than a Cadillac tournament.
That is way better than beating Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
Well, as you're driving around this piece of shit, before you wind up with the Trans Am, if you're the driver back in these days, Jake, which it sounds like you were on many occasions with Boogie Woogie sleeping in the back, what's the deal for the guys who rode with you? Is it payment by the mile, or what do you guys do?
Payment by the mile, man. 3 cents a mile.
3 cents a mile. So would you make out pretty decent on some of these trips?
Fuck no. By the time you think about the gas and the wear and tear on your car, no, you're not making out.
Oh, no.
We'll figure it out. 300 miles.
Okay.
So that'd be 600 for the trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's $18.
Yeah, that's not very good.
No, and you put three guys in there. So that's what, $48? No, $54. Whatever.
And in the meantime, you got to pay for gas, which is probably costing you more because you're hauling three big dudes in your car.
Right.
So maybe not worth it.
Able to buy your beer.
Well, see, now that would be the deal, I think, for me. Like, hey, you guys just buy my beer this whole trip.
I'd have made out better that way.
Probably. Now, you know, it doesn't sound like it was always fun to drive, but like I've heard a lot of guys say that they prefer to drive. But how did you feel about it? You like doing it?
Yeah, I did.
Why is that? You just like to have the control over the car?
I like the control. And I don't like being left alone on foot.
I got you. Well, one of the things we hear a lot in wrestling, and something that was just discussed on one of the shows I produce, is that wrestlers would often carry weapons on them while they traveled, and even into the locker room. Did you carry a weapon while you were on the road?
No, I didn't.
Now, what stopped? Because that's apparently a thing, because a lot of times you're getting paid in cash, and you got to go from town to town. What kept you from doing it?
I just... At that age, I knew that if I had a gun, I'd probably use it.
Okay.
You know, and I didn't want to do that.
You were a young man and still had a little bit of a wild streak in you.
Oh, I had a real wild streak in me.
Do you remember any folks that were carrying guns or knives or whatever that while they were on the road?
Piper.
Wow.
For sure. I can't think of anybody else right off. But I mean, I just don't think about things like that. Pretty sure Ole did.
He seems like a guy who would, yes.
There's others.
We hear that guys like, I don't know, Dr. D. David Schultz would always have a gun on him and guys like that.
Yeah.
And this is a business full of like alpha male personalities and some guys with maybe some questionable backgrounds at times.
Yeah.
did you ever see any of the boys use their weapons or threaten to use their weapons?
Just Piper.
Can you tell us the circumstances surrounding that?
Yeah, I had pulled a snake out on him. And he got to his briefcase and pulled that pistol out and had it in my face.
Holy shit.
And he was shaking like a leaf. He was not bullshitting.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this was during your time in the WWF then?
No, this was in Mid-Atlantic.
Okay.
I'd gotten a hold of a snake.
Gotcha. And so he's petrified of snakes, and he was willing to shoot you over it.
Yep.
Holy shit, man.
Yep.
Lucky
to get out of that one.
I'm just gonna guess you put that snake right back in the bag and defused it.
Fucking right, I did.
probably best for business.
Yeah.
I
remember who set me up for that rib.
Oh.
Somebody set me up to put the snake on Piper.
Okay, so you weren't just trying to play a joke yourself. Somebody was like, "Oh, this would be really funny."
Right. They urged me to do it. They would help me set him up where he'd have his back to me, you know.
Boy, almost getting shot is a pretty stiff rib.
Yeah, it is.
Well, before we move off of traveling, because this is something the fans are always asking about, and this is a question I see come up a lot on shoot interviews, who is the best wheelman in the history of the business?
Oh, I don't know, man. Steamboat was pretty good. Johnny Weaver was good.
Okay.
My father was real good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was a real good wheelman.
Just like guys you can rely on to not fall asleep at the wheel or whatever.
Right. Yeah, he was a workhorse.
Another name that stuck out as a guy you'll work with on numerous occasions between 1981 and 82 is Carl Fergie. And many fans will remember Carl as a referee in Mid-South Wrestling during your time there. But before that, he was like calling himself the pretty boy, and he was a heel wrestler in Mid-Atlantic. Another one of those names, Jake, that we will not likely discuss often on the show. What can you tell us about Carl?
Carl was a great guy, man. He was a great guy, really good guy, and not a bad worker either, you know. And hell, when I first met him, he was tag teamed up with Booker. Was one of the Moondogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They were a tag team in Mid-South. Larry Booker and Carl Fergie.
That's a pretty unique tag team, a combination you wouldn't really think of.
Yeah. And they had a good little thing going, but it wasn't going nowhere. You know, Bill Watts wasn't going to push them, but neither did the Crockett's, so you never got anything out of the Crockett's.
So, Carl, like you, because if I remember right, it was like a few of you made the jump from Mid-South to Mid-Atlantic. He was one of those guys.
He's one of those guys you got picked up and done nothing with.
A better worker or a better referee?
Probably a better referee.
Okay.
He was a great worker, though. It's not really fair to call that.
Maybe he's just great at both.
Yeah, he was. He definitely was.
Well, here's where things start to get pretty interesting. Do you remember who Fergie was teaming with at the time in Mid-Atlantic, 1982?
Ox Baker.
That's right. Very good. You'll team up with both Blackjack Jr. and Jay Youngblood on a few occasions to take on Fergie and Baker. And, man, again, this is one of the things I love about researching this, is you find out these tidbits, and I'm like, I cannot believe that Jake worked with Ox Baker. That is incredible.
Absolutely horrible.
Baker was horrible?
Oh, my God. You couldn't knock him down. If you knocked him down, he was like a cockroach on his back. He couldn't get up. He could not get up. He would lay there and the big old cockroach. And Carl would come in and grab his hand and pull him over to the corner and then pull him up to his feet.
Holy shit, man.
And meanwhile, you're in the middle of the ring twiddling your thumbs.
Right, because he just bumped for you. So in theory, you should be on him or waiting for him, and you can't do anything.
Nothing.
Oh my God, dude. That's amazing.
Just a dead spot in the match.
This would have been the only time in your career that you were around Ox, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how much do you know about his history in wrestling?
I don't know a whole lot.
Really old school background and style. Sounds like he wasn't necessarily a great worker, but he's got a reputation for being one of the nicest guys in wrestling behind the scenes, despite his ruthless character. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would.
Did you ever hear the story about him nearly starting a riot in Cleveland with Ernie Ladd?
No.
Okay, so he had like the heart punch. And what the promoters, what they were doing was he had worked with this guy and gave him the heart punch. And a couple weeks later, the guy died of, it was just congestive heart failure. But the promoters said like, oh, Ox Baker killed him. Yep.
Yeah.
And then it happened again where he wrestled a guy and like 2 weeks later, the guy died. So they're like, he killed another guy. And it was completely unrelated, of course. But so now he's starting to get all this heat and he's up in Cleveland with Ernie Ladd and he's getting heat on him by continually hitting Ladd and Ladd's not bumping for him. So he keeps giving him the heart punches. And so apparently it starts a riot in Cleveland. And guys were like coming into the ring, like with chairs and knives. And like, I guess he barely made it out with his fucking life.
Yeah, sounds like a good match.
Seriously, it's like that kind of heat is, I mean, you know, you're doing your job, I guess.
Yeah, I know he did it in Atlanta, too, where he gave a guy a heart punch and the guy died later.
Yeah, it's, man, I know that apparently he never liked to talk about it and he did like carry guilt. But in reality, it was like, I guess he didn't actually ever kill anybody.
No, he never killed anybody.
Can you talk to our listeners a little bit about finding the sweet spot when it comes to getting heat? Because, like, obviously you want to enrage the crowd, but starting a fucking riot with crazy fans trying to kill you is maybe a little too far.
Yeah. There's a fine line there, you know? And you got to know when to back off. Very few guys know when to back off, especially today, because the fans are so ring smart or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Guarantee you it can still be done.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could cause a riot easy.
Do you really think so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay, okay, coming soon to AEW TV. We're going to get a live riot, folks. You heard it here.
The people want it. The people get it.
I know that when you were in Florida and the Bahamas, you were involved in some pretty hairy situations.
Yeah.
Was there ever another riot that you were involved in?
Yeah.
When else?
In the Bahamas.
Okay.
I was wrestling Brown Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And we started a riot there. Fucking nearly got me killed.
I think I've heard. Was this when you had to wrap yourself in like a carpet to escape?
Yeah, right. I rolled up in a big mattress. And I could hear the bricks hitting it. Boom, 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 boom. Because they had already come in the dressing room and they were just standing over me throwing this shit on me, you know?
Holy shit.
Fuck yeah, it was scary as fuck, man. I think I wound up getting 17 stitches.
Even with the mattress?
Yeah, yeah.
Good, like, heads up thinking, though, Jake. Like, a lot of guys would see a mattress on the ground and probably run right past it. You're like, now there's an opportunity, and you wrap yourself up in it.
Wrap myself up in it, man.
Good awareness by the snake, folks.
Yeah.
Blackjack Jr. will move on to singles feud with Sergeant Slaughter, so that puts an end to that shit. You had just defeated Slaughter in a high-profile Cadillac tournament, so to me, it probably makes more sense to put you with him, but whatever. You're back in tags. As I was doing research on this one, I put in a call to David Crockett, who did tell me that the Crockett saw a lot in you as a performer. And he pointed out that they thought so highly of you that, as you mentioned, you know, they would just welcome you back anytime that, you know, they could get you to come back to the territory, even though you were frustrated.
Yeah.
In hindsight, do you feel like maybe it was a little hasty in departing the territory? Like, because it seems like David and those guys loved you and wanted to do something with you. Maybe they just weren't ready just yet.
Do it, but they wouldn't do it.
Mm.
And you can only take so much, man. You can only stay someplace for so long and doing nothing. And after you do nothing for a period of time, people just don't expect anything out of you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they give up. And that's the reason I finally came back as a heel, trying to Well, think maybe as a heel, they'll let me do something. Well, they let me do something, all right. They tagged me up with fucking Dory Funk, who I have all the respect in the world for, but at the age he was way past it.
Mm-hmm.
Way past it. Oh, my God. The matches with him were, it's worse than going to the dentist. Oh.
Just like slow plodding kind of style.
Yes. I would go out and start the match, tag him in, and then I knew I might as well just sit down for a while because he was going to spend the next 15 minutes doing his whole fucking spiel.
Oh, my God.
You know, plodding. Plop, 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 plop. Ooh, plop, 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 plop.
And while he's getting his shit in, you're stuck on the apron with like your thumb up your ass.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh man. Okay. You're painting a very clear picture on why you're frustrated. I get it.
Yeah, me and my manager.
Paul Jones.
Yep. Yeah.
Decent manager or no good?
He was horrible.
So Dory was bad, but Paul was bad too?
Oh, yes.
Why was Paul bad?
Paul was deaf.
Oh, really?
He couldn't hear shit. And he was scared.
Scared?
He was scared a fan was going to knife him.
Oh, my gosh. So not only is he deaf and he can't hear like when, you know, you guys are trying to call for a heat spot or whatever from him, but then he's afraid to get the heat in the first place.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's not a good situation to be in, Jake.
No, it wasn't. It was horrible.
Well, you're going to continue to tag with Barry here and there, but your new primary partner is Jay Youngblood, as we mentioned before. Before we go here today, Jake, I would like to talk a little bit more about Jay because we didn't cover much on him last time. Not a huge guy, was not a body guy, but by all accounts, a dude could go. What did you think of him as a performer and a promo?
He was a good performer and a decent promo. Yeah, he could go, man.
You know, I've heard it said before that while he was tagging with Steamboat, like the two had great chemistry and looked, they just looked good on like an 8x10 together. But Steamboat, very straight laced. And apparently he could get really frustrated with Jay's partying lifestyle.
Yeah.
When it came to Jay and his extracurriculars, what kind of stuff were you seeing him up to?
Oh man, I can't really go there. I mean, we were all doing a little bit of cocaine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, folks, it's 1982 and coke was like it was red hot in America. Like everybody was doing it, essentially.
Yeah, it was real hot, man.
It's 42 years later, Jake. Hypothetically, if I were to ask you who might be the best source for getting my hands on some drugs in the Mid-Atlantic locker room, who might you point me in the direction of?
A referee.
Really? Was that shit? Who was that? Tommy Young?
No. No. It was the other one.
The other one. Shit.
The old man.
The old guy.
Yeah.
No shit. He was the source.
He was the source, man.
How about that?
He had, do you know that his name was, he refereed under Sonny Fargo. And he had the worst name a human has ever been given.
What was it?
His name, his real legal name was Iggy Opadiah Faggart.
Man, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you guys were ribbing him on a regular basis.
Oh, fuck, man. That was old news.
But that dude was the source for the fun.
He was the source.
So you couldn't be too mean to him about his terrible name.
No.
Well, a couple questions and we're done. I've heard a few people say that if Jay hadn't passed away in 1985, that he would have been a big star in wrestling. Do you think he had reached his full potential, or was there more opportunity for him beyond what he had achieved?
Yeah, he could have done more. He could have done more for sure.
Yeah, I mean, hell, you can just, like, the guy comes off the screen, and again, you and I have talked about it here before, it's like the X factor. Some guys just have it, and some don't, and it's something about that guy, it's like, I think Vince could have done something with him.
Yeah, he could have done something with him.
Would you say you were close with him or just working acquaintances?
Working acquaintances.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we're going to talk about Jay Moore moving forward. Actually, you guys are going to be involved in a big tournament here coming up in Mid-Atlantic, so we'll talk about that. There's a great photo of the two of you walking to the ring, and you've got a little kid kind of trying to hold your hand or get an autograph from you. So we'll share that one online. It's really cool. So we'll talk about it here coming up soon, but that's going to wrap us up for this week, brother.
All right, my man.
Okay, guys, as always, if you're looking to attract that 25 to 54-year-old male demographic to your product or service, why haven't you gone to advertisewithsnake.com? Jake is a legitimate household name. He is still over like Rover, and you can get him to put over your stuff to the exact audience that you're targeting. And look, I know everybody wants proof. If you want proof that it works, just check out the show. We are always advertising for the same businesses because they come to find that what we do on the show works. Head over to advertisewithsnake.com and get teamed up with the Hall of Famer, Jake the Snake Roberts. Go now and check out jakethesnakeshop.com for rare signed collectibles straight from the master of the DDT himself. We're talking about autographed figures, shirts, 8x10s, and so much more over there. You guys have got to check out the custom sculptures of Jake made by Sin Bodhi. They are available now, and they're on sale at an incredible discount. They're all signed by Jake, and they're not going to last forever. It's a fire sale. So get over there and take advantage of it while the product still lasts, because let me tell you, they are going fast. It's jakethesnakeshop.com. Get over there, add a new centerpiece to your wrestling collection. Get over to Cameo. It's cameo.com/JakeSnake and get a personal message from the Hall of Famer. Here's a recent review from Tanner. My hero. This brought tears to my eyes. He did such a great job, and this video will be cherished for life. Now, look, guys, if you're a lifelong fan like Tanner, you've got to get a Cameo from Jake. It's such a cool, unique thing, something you can keep forever, something you can show your friends, and something that Jake really puts a lot of effort into. It's cameo.com/JakeSnake. Go and order yours today. Get over to the Snake Pit page at boxofgimmicks.com. Check out some of the amazing stuff we've got over there. Not only is it a great way to support the podcast, but we are also very tuned in to the fashion that wrestling fans of the 80s and 90s might be attracted to. We've even remade some of Jake's most iconic shirts with a modern twist so you can reclaim that favorite shirt from your childhood. Seriously, just go and have a look. You're going to love the style that we've got on our page. Again, it's the Snake Pit page at boxofgimmicks.com. Check us out on YouTube. It's youtube.com/@snakepitpod. You'll get short clips from the show, highlights. And like I mentioned, we're going to start looking to provide some exclusive content over there. Jake and I are very fast approaching 30,000 subscribers. And as we get closer, we're also going to be doing another giveaway. So don't miss your chance to own a signed figure, a card, an 8x10, or who knows what awesome collectible from the master of the DDT. Also, we do YouTube exclusive episodes, clips you won't hear on the podcast, and much more over there. Do us a big favor, go and get subscribed, and start enjoying everything that the Snake Pit has to offer on YouTube. And look, I got to do my usual while we're talking about YouTube and remind you that Hacksaw Jim Duggan is over there exclusively on the Everybody's Got a Pod YouTube page. So that's Ted's podcast, Everybody's Got a Pod, and Ted and Jim share the YouTube channel. So you've got to go and get subscribed and get caught up on both shows. It's youtube.com/@everybodysgotapod. You'll hear some amazing stories from both guys. You'll get some exclusive clips, and you can even enjoy videos straight from Jim himself as he documents his travels, his home, his collection of wrestling memorabilia, and much more. Again, it's youtube.com/@everybodysgotapod. If you've enjoyed the Snake Pit, please like, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review on all platforms. That does Jake and I a major favor. Only takes you a couple minutes, so please, if you've enjoyed the show, hook us up. And just a reminder, you can get the Snake Pit and all the other shows in our network early and ad-free at adfreeshows.com. You know, Jake and I might be leaving the network, but that doesn't mean that they don't still have a lot of great stuff over there. The Sandman has got his exclusive AFS show called Enter Sandman. I mentioned David Crockett over there with the book, and David, gosh, such great stories. Getting to talk to him to do research for this episode was eye-opening. David is irreplaceable when it comes to knowledge, and that show that he does with Conrad, the book, is full of some must-hear content for old-school wrestling fans, fans of the Four Horsemen, etc. You've got Kevin Sullivan every Tuesday on Tuesdays with the Taskmaster. Lex Luger does a monthly series called Lex Express, and much more. If you're a wrestling fan and you love wrestling podcasts, you've got to check out adfreeshows.com. Catch Jake on X at JakeSnakeDDT, on Instagram at JakeTheSnakeDDT, and on Facebook at RealJakeTheSnake. You can follow me at Marcus P. D'Angelo on X, and you can follow the podcast at SnakePitPod on all social media platforms. Gosh, what a blast looking back to Mid-Atlantic with Jake. I mean, it's an underrated, undiscussed part of his career, and I'm really happy that we're getting to do it here. I also, one more time, want to extend my thanks to AdFreeShows.com, Evan Polisher, Conrad Thompson, of course, Dave Silva, everybody involved with it over there. They've been incredible people, incredible for my career. But Jake and I just got to go, as we said, learn a new hold. So we'll be back next week right here on the Snake Pit.